Good morning, everybody. This week's sedra is Parashat Vayigash. However, I'm going to use the end of Miketz as a means of getting into Parashat Vayigash, because I believe that there's no way to fully understand the beginning of Vayigash without learning the end of Miketz. In addition to the fact that, as I will explain in a few moments, I've never said a shir on Parashat Miketz, and there's a reason why I haven't done that. I'll explain that. So I do want to have one shir, at least, that I can call Miketz or Miketz and Vayigash, so that one day when the collected tapes of these shirim are together, we will have a tape on Miketz as well. But the parasha is Vayigash, and I want to dedicate this shir to the memory of Bela Bat Shmuel Olah HaShalom, Helen Gross's mother, who Parashat Vayigash was her yahrzeit. In memory of her, we're going to learn Miketz Vayigash, and it may be a slightly different approach. But okay, why not do something that may be a little different and a little bit exciting? I think to fully appreciate the difficulty in the very first word in Parashat Vayigash, one has to read the end of Miketz. Let me read a few psukim. I really want to begin with chapter Mem Dalid, Pasuk Zayin, 43, chapter 43, Pasuk 7. The brothers have now been for the second time at the house of Yosef. Yosef has planted his cup in the baggage of Binyamin, the great frame-up. They've left his home. He sends his men after them. They pursue them, and they catch up with the brothers. And they say, "Why did you steal my master's cup? Don't you know that my master, without his cup, he divines with it." And the brothers, Mem Dalet Zayin, Vayom Ravela, they said to him, "Lama Yadabra Adoni Kadvor Ravela, why should you say such things? Chalila Lavanecho Mayasot Kadvor Hazeh, God forbid that we should do anything to the Zod. We stole his cup. What are you talking about?" And they're even going to prove it. The Medrash points out this is one of the Kal v'chomers in Torah. They're going to say a Kal v'chomer. The money that you put back into our baggage when we went up the first time, we brought all of that back from Canaan in order to return the money. We're returning the money to you. So we're going to turn around now and steal from you? It doesn't make sense. It's illogical. Hein kesef asher motzanu b'fi amtechotenu. The money that we found in at the opening of our baggage, Heshivon Me'elechom Eretz Canaan, we brought it back to you from the land of Canaan. Ve'ech nignov mi beit Adonecha, how could we steal from the house of your master? Kesef, zav, silver, or gold. Therefore, Hashem Matzei Tomi Avodecha, made the one in whose things it will be found shall be put to death. Ve'gam anachnu niyeh La Adoni Lavadim, we will be slaves to my master. Can be. Vayomer. So he said, Gam ato now kidvrechem kainhu. As you say, so it shall be. Asher yimatze yito, but we're going to go easier with you. Asher yimatze yito, yellow ever, the one by whom we will find the cup will be a slave. Vatem tiunikim, the rest of you will be found innocent and clean and clear. Vayemaru, they hurried, vayoridu, ishatam tachto, arza, each one brought his baggage down to the ground. Vayiftachu, isham tachto, each one opened his sack. Vayechapes, he started searching. Pagadol hechel, began with the oldest, ubakoton kila, and ending with the youngest. Vayimotze Hargavia, and the there it was, the cup was found on Tachat Binyamin, in Binyamin's sack. Vayikru Simlotam, they tore their garments. Vayamos Ishal Chamoro, each man put back his sack upon his donkey. Vayoshuvo Ha'ira, they came back to the city. Vayavo Yehuda Ve'echov Veita Yosef, Yehuda and his brothers came to the house of Yosef. This pasuk will be important later on as we get into the shir. Yehuda and his brothers came to the house of Yosef. Vuhu Odenu Sham, Yosef is still there. Vayiplu Lufan of Arzan, they fell before him to the ground. Vayomalem Yosef, Yosef said to them, remember, they don't know who this Yosef is. They only know him as a totalitarian dictator, one who seems clearly out to find fault with them and convict them. Vayomalem Yosef, Yosef said, Ma Masa Azer Asher Asitum, what did you do? How long you got them? You know that a man like me, I divine, I look into the my cup tells me something. I don't know whether it was tea leaves or coffee grains or palms of hands that he read. Yehuda said, what is there that we can say? What can we talk? How can we justify? Nothing left for us to say. God found the sin of your servants. Hinenu avodim ladoni, we are servants to my master. Gam anachnu, gam ashenim tzar gavir biyado. All of us, we are your slaves, the one in whose possession the cup was found. Vayomer, Yosef says, here is an act of great magnanimity. Yehuda is ready that they should all be slaves. And Yosef says, Chalila, God forbid, may I stop Zohar from doing something like this? The man in whose possession the cup is found, who he will be a slave. And you go up in peace to your father. This is the end of this sedra. Now, as we stand at the end of Parashat Miketz, where is Yehuda and where is Yosef? Who's speaking to Yosef? Yehuda is speaking to Yosef, right? The two of them are facing each other. When we read the beginning of Vayigash immediately after the end of Miketz, we see the problem in Vayigash. Vayigash El of Yehuda are the next few words. And Yehuda, how do we translate it? He approached him. What do you mean he approached him? He's there. He's standing and talking to him. If you let a whole week go by, and then you come to Vayigash at the next week, and what you're forgetting, you forgot already what happened at the end of Miketz. So then Vayigash Elav Yehuda, as though Yehuda comes in, approaches the king or the viceroy to the king and speaks to him. But no, they're in the middle of a conversation. And do you know what happens at the end of Miketz? We're waiting with bated breath to find out what's going to happen. It's a cliffhanger. My wife is smiling. I don't know, because on the block as I drove out of my house this morning, I see a truck that says on it, cliffhanger. In English, I'm wondering, what's this cliffhanger? Well, was it somebody that does avodot begova? Things are, you know, if you need work done in high places, heights. Cliffhanger. All right. Couldn't have found a better, some kind of a Hebrew term for it rather than cliffhanger. No, most probably by now already the people who he works for think it's Hebrew. Cliffhanger.
They use the right
accent. Vayigash Elav Yehuda, when you read it now, without the interruption of a whole week, it strikes you. What do you mean Vayigash? He's standing there. We'll come back to that. If I don't get back to that, you know, of course, that you must remind me to make sure that I get back. The uniqueness of the approach that I want to take to an understanding, really, of both Miketz and Vayigash, I'm going to use as the means, the vehicle, I'm going to use the Haftorah of Parashat Miketz. Now, of course, if you have a chumash like I have, or those brown and blue ones over there, where you have Parshat Miketz, what comes immediately after Miketz? The Haftorah of Miketz, and then you go straight into Vayigash. When you have the three of them lined up that way, you will see exactly what I mean. Let me explain. Let me explain. In the course of the last 100 years, Parshat Miketz was Shabbos Chanukah 71 times. During the course of the last 100 years, both Vayeshev and Miketz was Shabbos Chanukah. The first day of Shabbos was Parshas Vayeshev. The last day of Chanukah was Parshas Miketz. 8 days. 2 Shabbos Chanukahs. Or 2 Shabtot Chanukah. That means 71 times Miketz alone is Shabbos Chanukah. There's 1 Shabbos Chanukah and it's Miketz. 11 times, what did I say? Not 11, 18 times. 18 times Vayeshev and Miketz are Shabbos Chanukah. In the last 100 years, only 11 times was Miketz not Shabbos Chanukah. And usually when it's not Shabbos Chanukah, it comes a day or two after Chanukah. When Miketz is not Shabbos Chanukah, then you read the Haftorah that appears here in the Chumash. That means this Haftorah is read 11 times in 100 years, and the fact is that the last time it was read was in 1977, just about 20 years ago. Now, that means, I mean, the way I see it, of course, the choice of this Haftorah is related, has to, of course, be related to Miketz. Otherwise, the Haftorah that we read usually on Vayeshev and Miketz are related to Chanukah. They are the Haftorah of Chanukah. Here we have a Haftorah that's made for Miketz only 11 times. And of all things, it's a story that everybody knows. Everybody knows the story. I want to use the Haftorah of Miketz, and you will see how I'm going to do this. I want to use the Haftorah of Miketz in order to explain Miketz and precisely what's going to happen at the beginning of Vayigash. What's the Haftorah about? I'm really only going to read the first pasuk of the Haftorah, and the rest I'll be able to tell it to you. The Haftorah begins by saying, "Vayikat Shlomo." Shlomo woke up. V'hinei chalom. Behold, he had a dream. How does he respond to the fact that he had a dream? Vayavo Yerushalayim. He came to Yerushalayim. Vayamod lifnei Aron Brit Hashem, and he stood before the Ark of the Covenant of God. Vayal Olot. He brought Olot on the Mizbeach. Vayas Shlomim. Vayas Mishtel Cholavodim, and he made a party for all of his servants. Let me give you the background to this pasuk. The background to this pasuk is God appears to Shlomo in Givon. Shlomo has just been appointed king. Better said, just been anointed king. Shlomo is in Givon. That's where the Mishkan is. God appears to him and asks him, "What can I do for you? What can I give you?" And Shlomo HaMelech asks for Lev Chacham. He wants a wise heart. A heart of wisdom so that he should be able to judge his people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is extremely impressed and he says, "You could have asked for wealth, for power, for might, for prominence. You could have asked for so many things. And what did you ask for? You asked for wisdom. A heart of wisdom so you should be able to judge the people of Israel. You should be able to lead them. Because you asked for that and you didn't ask for all of those worldly goods, I'm going to give them all to you. I'm going to give you wisdom. I'm going to give you wealth, power, influence, everything you're going to have." The Haftorah begins when the dream is all finished. Vayikat Shlomo wakes up and behold, it's a dream. He realized that he dreamed. What it means is that during the course of the dream, it was so real, he felt it was indeed happening. He and God are conversing. When he wakes up, then he realizes that it was a dream. He comes to Yerushalayim, makes a big party. The rest of the Haftorah is, then two women harlots came before him. The famous story of the two women who are locked in struggle over a child. One woman is holding the baby. The other woman says, I gave birth. This woman gave birth. Her child died. She, in the middle of the night, took my child from me and gave me her dead child. That living child is mine, is mine. Here is the great Mishpat Shlomo's judgment in this case. And of course, everybody knows the story that Shlomo HaMelech says, bring a sword, and he says, Gezoru, Gezoru, cut the child in half. Give one half to this woman and one half to that woman. Vatomer ha'isha, I'm reading another pasuk from that Torah. Vatomer ha'isha, the woman, asher b'no ha'chai el ha'melech, the woman who was really the mother of the living child, said to the king, ki nichmeru rachameho aleho, al-b'no, because her mercy, her pity, her compassion for her child overwhelmed her. And she said, Vatomer, Biadoni, please, my master, tumulos hayolodachai, give her the living child. Vahameit altumitu, don't put him to death. Vizot omeret, what does the other woman say? Gamli gamloch lo yiye. You're not going to have the baby, and I'm not going to have the baby. Gizoru, cut him up. Of course, then Shlomo HaMelech says, give her the baby, she is his mother. All right. Why is this chosen as the Haftorah for Parashat Miketz? So the Mefarshim that I've seen say that, nearly the same words appear in Miketz, Paro dreams. You remember the beginning of Miketz? Paro dreams. He dreams about fat cows and thin cows and fat corns of ear and thin corns of ear. The thin ones are swallowing up the fat ones. Vayikatz Paro, Paro awoke, v'hine, and behold, chalom. There's a dream. How does the Haftorah begin? Vayikach Shlomo, Shlomo woke up, v'hinei chalom, and behold, it's a dream. So I've seen some of the Farshim that say that the relationship between the Sedra and the Haftorah is, here there's a dream, and there's a dream. Here it's a king who dreams, here it's a king who dreams. Of course, the reactions are different. Paro is confused, Paro doesn't understand his dream. Shlomo HaMelech understands the dream well, and it for him is a source of great joy and jubilation, and he makes a party. He comes to Yerushalayim and he makes a party. I mean, there are a lot of not only similarities, but very often a Haftorah is chosen not for the similarity but also the contrast. Sure, both kings, but take a look at what they're dreaming about. One is dreaming about the economy, about cows and ears of corn, and the other is dreaming that God appears to him and asks him what it is that he wants, and he says, I want a heart of understanding. I mean, these are two dreams of completely different kinds. But I have difficulty accepting the idea that that's the reason why the Haftorah was chosen. Because if that's why the Haftorah was chosen, then Ikar Choser Min HaSefer, the most important part, is left out. Before the Haftorah, there are 10 psukim that describe the dream. If our rabbis would have wanted a connection, dream, dream, king, king, so you know what they should have done? The Haftorah should have begun 10 psukim earlier with the whole dream. But it begins at the end of the dream, after the dream is all over. It's not the dream, and by the way, the total Haftorah that we have before us has 15 psukim. By right, the Haftorah should have 21 psukim. If they would have added the 10 psukim of the dream, then you would have had 25 psukim, which is a real gezunta, that's a real Haftorah. But it's not only that it wasn't included. The fact that the Haftorah begins after the dream is an indication that the dream is not what's important. You know what's really important? What's really important is the story of the two women. In what way does the story of the two women and the baby, how does that relate to Parshas Miketz? What does it have to do with Miketz? And I'm going to say even more. Not only is it related to Parshas Miketz, it's the introduction to Vayigash. It bridges the gap. You have to go Miketz, Haftorah, Vayigash. And that's the way it appears. Those chumashim that we have in front of us, Muslim, that's exactly the way it appears. The story of the two women is an indication to all of Israel that Shlomo is a king. The very last pasuk in the Haftorah says, "Vayihi Hamelech Shlomo Melech Al Kol Yisrael." Shlomo was king over all of Israel. He became king over all of Israel as a result of this story of the two women who presented themselves before him. I have identified what I feel are four of the requirements that make up the personality of a king. A king needs certain talents, certain abilities. I've identified four. You may be able to identify more than my four, but you won't be able to say anything about it until after the class is over. For the present, it's going to be four. What are the four that I identified? Number one, a king is the one who must ultimately assume responsibility. Achrayut is the word. The buck stops here. In the personality of a melech must be ingrained and fully developed the idea of achrayut, responsibility. I have to do the job. Two women over here who've come before the king cannot say, well, I think that you should bring this to a lower appellate court and then let it go through the system until it passes the bagatz. And if it doesn't pass the bagatz, then you'll come to me. No. They present themselves before him, he has the responsibility, and he's going to have to deal with this extremely, extremely difficult problem. Responsibility. Do you know what's happening in Parshat Miketz? Miketz is a great deal different than the Parsha that preceded it and what we talked about in our last shiur. In our last shiur, we talked about the fall of Yehuda. After the sale of Yosef, it says, Vayered Yehuda, Me'ev Echov, Yehuda went down, and we learned the Rashi, that Rashi says, Horiduhu Migedulato, the brothers stripped him of his leadership, of his greatness, because they said, listen, we followed your advice. You're the one that told us that we should sell him. If you would have said, bring him back to father, we would have brought him back to father. So Yehuda is now in the political wasteland out there, separated from his brothers, stripped of his position of authority. He's not the great brother. But something happens in this Sedra. There's a turning point in this Sedra. In this Sedra, as the brothers are preparing to go down to Mitzrayim for the second time, so they tell their father, listen, that man down there said that we cannot present ourselves before him unless we have our small brother with us. If you're going to send Binyamin, we can go. If you don't send Binyamin, we can't go. Yaakov says, I can't send Binyamin. Reuven says to his father, listen, if I don't bring him back, you can kill my two children, my two sons. And that didn't impress Yaakov too much. And your two sons are not my Einiklach. They're not my children too. I mean, what does he mean? So therefore the matter is shelved. Then it says that the hunger gets worse. They are now really in need of food. So they father says, well, what are we going to do? Man said he wants to see our young child, our young brother. So it's very fascinating. I just want to, I'll read a pasuk in Parashat Miketz. 2. When Reuven speaks to his father, it says, Vayomer Reuven el Aviv lemor, Reuven said to his father, so saying, at Shnei Bana, you can kill my two sons if I don't bring Binyamin back. Later, it may have been a few months later, when Yehuda speaks to his father, it doesn't just say Yehuda said to his father. The pasuk says, Mem Gimel Chet, Vayome Yehuda el Yisrael Aviv. Yehuda said to his father Yisrael. Why wasn't father called by name Yisrael when Reuven spoke to him? For that matter, why isn't he called Yaakov? For that matter, why call him any name? It just could have been, and Yehuda said. But there's something significant when the Pasuk decides to say that Yehuda spoke to his father Yisrael. Because something is happening extremely important right now. Do you know what I believe is happening? It's not only Yehuda who is speaking to his father Yisrael, he's speaking to Klal Yisrael. Yehuda now is beginning to emerge out of the wilderness, the desert in which he found himself. And you know what he's beginning to do now? He is beginning to again assume the leadership of this family. Yehuda says to his father Yisrael, Shilcha hanariti, send the boy with me, v'nakuma v'nelecha, we're going to get up and we're going to go, v'nichya, we're going to live, v'lo namut, and we're not going to die. If we extend what he's saying over here to mean not only the immediate family of Yaakov, but what he's also talking about is Klal Yisrael, and I'm going to prove that, what we begin to see is the rise of Yehuda. Yisrael will live and will not die. Gam anachnu, gam ata, gam tapenu, we, you, our children. And here comes the great word. Onochi e'ervenu, I will guarantee the child's safety. Miyadi tevakshenu, from my hand you will seek him. Im lo haviyotu ve'elecha, v'hitzakti v'lonecha, if I don't bring him to you and present him before you, v'chatasi lecha kol hayamim, I will have sinned to you for all my life. Ki lule hit mamonu, if we wouldn't have tarried and waited, we could have been back and forth twice already. Anochi ervenu. You know what anochi ervenu means? I will guarantee the safety of the child. This is Yehuda taking responsibility. The buck stops with me. It's my task. It's my obligation. In the Haftorah, who accepts the responsibility of returning the child to its mother? Shlomo HaMelech. The one who is the king from the house of Yehuda. In the Sedrith there is accepting responsibility. Awesome responsibility. I'm going to return the boy to his father. In the Haftorah, Shlomo acts as a king because he guarantees that he's going to return the child to her mother. So that's number one. Number two, I believe that it's extremely important for a king, it's a requirement for a king to be able to see reality as it is. A king cannot live in a dream world of visions, or maybe, that was a good word, a dream world. The king cannot live in a dream world. He cannot live in a world of what he would like to see or what he would hope could be. He can't be thinking about a new Middle East. He has to be rooted in reality. The king has to be able to see reality very often in all of its ugliness. Because if he's not capable of seeing that, he's going to fail in his responsibility as a king. You have to be able to see that there is cruelty in the world and there's falsehood. You can't take people at face value. You know what the wisdom of Shlomo was in his mishpat, the judgment? I think to myself often, what happens if the not real mother, the phony mother, was going to surprise us all? And the fact is that what would have been the most intelligent thing for her to say? You know what the most intelligent thing would have been for her to say? Give her the child. And then you know what would happen in the presence of Shlomo? Shlomo would be standing there in absolute total embarrassment. And the two women would be standing one another, no, you have the baby. No, you have the baby. No, it's yours. No, it's yours. And the Mishpat Shlomo, the great Mishpat, would have ended up a total fiasco, a failure. You know what Shlomo understands? Shlomo understands that there's real cruelty that exists in this world. And a woman who is cruel enough to want to steal the child of another woman, her cruelty is going to go all the way, and she will say the unimaginable. If you would have asked us in advance, we're all smart now because we learned Mishpat Shlomo. But I don't think we're that smart. I don't think that we would have the ability to fully penetrate and realize the extent of this woman's evil, that she is ready to say, cut the child in half. I'm not going to have it, and you're not going to have it. I would have assumed she'd be smart. Certainly if she'd have a hotshot lawyer there, what do you think he would tell her? Tell her she can have the baby. And then you know where we're at? We're back at a stalemate. An absolute stalemate. One who is to judge has to know that there can be people staring you in the face with the most innocent of looks on their faces, and they're lying to you, lying all the way, not a word is true. If you're not capable of realizing this and you see the whole world through rosy eyes, and everything's good and people are good and everybody's good and everybody's warm and you know everything's going to be great and we're all going to live happily ever after, that's not a look of reality. A king has to be able to see reality. Shlomo HaMelech sees it in the Haftarah. Yehuda is the one who is going to see it. And do you know at what moment he's going to fully penetrate it? At the moment that he says Vayigash. When it says Vayigash, we're going to point out that Vayigash means not that he is moving geographically from point one to point two. He has begun to plumb the depths of the heart of this fellow Tzafnat Paneah who's standing before him. He has studied him fully. He knows the psychology of this man. And he's going in for the verbal kill. And it's going to be a verbal kill. Except for one thing. The great surprise that will come at the end. The real verbal kill is going to come when Yosef turns around and says to him, Ani Yosef, I'm Yosef. But Yehuda is not aware of that. But Yehuda prepares himself fully, because he now understands what it is, or thinks he understands, what's motivating this man, Tzafnat Paneah. A king has to be able to see reality for what it is. That's number two. So the first that I said is achrayut, responsibility. The second is to see that there is, yes, evil lurks in the hearts and minds of men. The third, huh? Of course, what are you talking about? You just dated yourself from which what generation? So we both listened to The Shadow on radio long before TV. I tell you, I think one of the great strengths of Malchus is brinksmanship. Brinksmanship. Lalechet hakoach lalechet ad hasof velo lehirata. To be able to go to the brink, to the end. Eyeball to eyeball. I tell you, if I would have had to do Mishpat Shlomo, I most probably, I don't know, even if I pop volumes, I couldn't have done it. Bring me a sword, cut the child in half. The sword is coming down. Who cries chicken first? What happens if nothing is going to happen? What happens if nobody says anything? Is he going to go through with it? I'll tell you, I'm becoming so nervous thinking about it. I need a value. The nerves, you need nerves of steel. Yehuda is standing up now, is going to stand up to speak before Yosef. And he knows that everything depends on the words he's now going to say. He is going to have to attempt to influence, evoke compassion, threaten. He's going to have to take Yosef to the brink, and he's going to have to be ready to go through with it to the end. There's no turning back. We small people are not brinksmen. When I didn't have my shiur ready till a few hours before I said it for the first time last night, I was a nervous wreck. Should I describe my condition? I'm not going to. To be able to go to the brink and not flinch, eyeball to eyeball, that's a tremendous kaya. It's a tremendous strength. You know, I'm beginning to think that I'm going to turn it from 4 into 5. There's something else. This is number 4. No. 3. This is 3. Just a moment. Let's go over it again. Number 1 was achrayut, responsibility. Number 2, the ability to see reality clearly. Number 3 is brinksmanship. Number 4. All right, I think most probably by the next time I say this year, it'll go up to 6. But right now, it's going to go up one more. It's really what we said in the last year. Yehuda's ability to say the truth, even when the truth is going to hurt him for the rest of his life. To be honest. A word is a word. When Tamar is being taken out to be burned at the stake, and she presents Yehuda with the signet ring, the staff, his cloak, without hesitation, the most painful admission of all, sot because she's right, me many, I am the one. And we describe the profound embarrassment of the worst order.
In public,
yes. The ability of a king to be absolutely honest to a fault. So that was, so we had that 4. That was 4. 5. Huh?
4. And we have Shlomo.
Number 5, and I tell you, I have a special thrill with regard to number 5. Number 5 is the responsibility, the prime responsibility of a king is to maintain, to strengthen, to develop the unity of the Jewish people. Achdus, unity of the Jewish people. Yehuda is the one who, for all intents and purposes, has emerged as a leader, and he speaks for all of them. And he is ultimately the one who's going to bring about, together with Yosef, the two of them together are going to bring about the unity of the Jewish people. Do you know what I see in the story of the baby in the Haftarah? The baby is symbolic of the body politic of the Jewish people. That baby represents the Jewish people, and you know what the task of a king is? To make sure that that baby is going to remain whole. It's going to remain one. What was it that thrilled me about this? I said it in shul when I came home. After davening, somebody had left a message by me in shul that Rav Kook had written once an essay called Gezoru. Gezoru are the word that Shlomo HaMelech said about the baby. Cut the baby. And you know what he said? I don't have to say what he said. It seemed that just precisely what I had said in shul. One of our gentlemen here had given me an article. Mr. Schiff, right? So he gave me an article that appeared in the Jerusalem Report a few weeks ago by Zev Chayfetz, a two-state solution. We can fight over this country, make one another miserable at best, and destroy one another at worst, or we can do what logic dictates and separate. There's enough land, people, and resources for two Hebrew states, Judea and Israel. In Judea, most probably they'll send me, you, most of you, all of you if you're okay. Right-wing extremists, Chevron Mitnachalim, Vadlaman Tzion of Harno. All the crazies. Take all the crazies and put them together, and most probably their capital will be the Maarat HaMachpelah. And then you take all of the writers and the artists and the Aviv Geffens and the rest of them. You take the whole bunch of them, And you'll give them Tel Aviv as their capital. Divide, 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 and that's it. And we won't have trouble anymore. We'll have Shmirah Shabbos wherever we are. Or maybe, if Zev Chayfetz, and I always found of quoting my wife's word about Zev Chayfetz, he's a Chayfetz Chashud. She said that when he wrote his article about complaining that he wasn't able to marry his shiksa, he couldn't marry his shiksa over here with all the love in his heart. He couldn't marry her here. He had to go off someplace else in the world where he could marry her. Or Rani Milo sort of wants to establish that Yerushalayim Shabbos, Tel Aviv Chalila v'chas Kol Davish Tarapi. No, sorry, there's Chol Shabbos. No, we're gonna have the capital of Shmir Shabbos is over here, and the capital of Chol Shabbos is going to be Tel Aviv, and neither the twain shall ever meet. I don't know where Ramat Chaim fits into this. It's a satellite city of Tel Aviv. This is Chachma. This is Narishkeit. The responsibility of a king is, regardless of what the circumstances, regardless of how bitter the battle is between the two sides, to tear the baby apart. He has to keep the baby together. That's really, Rav Kook rejected the idea of Gezoru, and really that's what the Shlomo HaMelech wanted. Shlomo HaMelech wanted the baby should be. He's bringing it to the brink so that he can keep the baby together. Achdus is the responsibility of Melech. That's his ultimate test. Is he able to bring all of the disparate parts and segments of the Jewish community together in one? The baby represents Klal Yisrael. And there are always going to be opposing forces out there that will want to tear the baby apart. And the king has to make certain that it's not going to happen. And when the king proves to all that it's not going to happen, then it says, Shlomo was king over all of Yisrael. Yehuda is doing that. During the course of Parkas Miketz, what's really happening is Yehuda is emerging as the leader of his family. And he is going to demonstrate the qualities of Malchus. The ability to accept responsibility, the ability to see reality for what it is, the art of brinksmanship, and truthfulness, to be truthful all the way. Truthful from a halachic perspective. Because when we read the speech of Yehuda, he may, in a sense, at the beginning of Vayigash over there, he may be, at some points he's going to be brutally honest. Honest to a fault. And then there are moments at which he's going to sort of bend the truth a little bit. But the ultimate truth is to save Binyamin. That's the real truth of it all. And if you have to use a little white, I don't want to use the word lie, I can't even use the word falsehood, something that does not completely jive with the truth, that's also okay. By the way, I have another proof that the Haftorah of Miketz, this unusual and rare Haftorah, the Haftorah of Miketz is related not to the story of the dreams, but related to the end of the parasha, and that it really is the bridge that takes us from Miketz to Vayigash, the growth and the development of Yehuda as king, because there are similar terms. The woman whose son is the living one said to the king, mercy overcame him when he saw his brother. He wanted to cry, so he went into a room alone so that he can cry. Here Nichmeru, here it's the mother for her son, the brother for his kid brother, his baby brother. And then one other pasuk. And you know, we read the psukim quickly and we sort of lose sight that in just a simple term, a word or two, the Pasuk is telling us something dramatic that has happened. And the Pasuk wants to point out to us how dramatic is what has happened. At the end of Miketz, what's the Pasuk before Maftir? Pasuk 14. Chapter Mem Dalet Pasuk 14. We read the Pasuk before. Vayavo Yehuda ve'echav beita Yosef. Yehuda and his brothers, they're being brought back now. The Ganavim. They're being brought back now, and it says Yehuda and his brothers came to the house of Yosef. If I'm not mistaken, this is the first time there's anything of the sort. Yehuda is mentioned separately from his brothers. Why doesn't it simply say, as it had said up until now, they all came down, they all went up. Now when they are being brought back, it says all of a sudden, Vayomer Yehuda. By the way, when they had been talking with the soldiers that Yosef had sent to bring them back, it doesn't say who was talking. They said, and they hurried, and they did. Everything is they. Nobody is singled out. And now all of a sudden, for the first time, Vayavo Yehuda ve'echav beita Yosef. Yehuda and his brothers came to the house of Yosef. Why doesn't it say Vayavo'u beita Yosef? They came to the house of Yosef. Because what's happening now at the end of Miketz, they are in deep crisis. And do you know to whom they're turning? Unspoken and unsaid. They are turning to the man who possesses the qualities of leadership. Malchus. Yehuda now, toward the end of the Seder, he's going to emerge. And take a look. Look at what happens. Vayomalem Yosef, the next passage said, Joseph said to them, what is this that you've done? Don't you know that I divine? Vayomer Yehuda. Yehuda said, Yehuda now was the spokesman, just as he was the spokesman at home when he turned to the father and he said, Tata, I guarantee the safety of the child. From me you will seek that child. Yehuda had already taken responsibility in the house of his father. That's why it's now natural that the brothers are going to look to him, that he should now represent them to whom they see as the nations of the world. Yehuda has emerged into the light of day. He's out of that political desert. He has moved. He's fallen. He fell very low. Very, very low. But he has now risen to the heights. And what's going to happen at the beginning of Vayigash, the Medrash is going to describe it, the struggle, the colossal struggle, the collision course between two kings, Yehuda and Yosef. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Says the Pasuk, Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Rashi makes no comment over here on Vayigash Elav Yehuda. And I have a feeling that Rashi makes no comment because Rashi assumes that you should have remembered. Sometimes you should remember what he said earlier. The word Vayigash appears in Parashat Vayeda. The angels had come to the house of Avram. They tell him that his wife is going to have a child. Two of the angels leave on their way to destroy Sodom and Amorah. God says to himself, am I going to conceal from Avram that which I plan to do? I'm the one who has promised him that all of these lands will belong to him, and I'm now going to destroy Sodom and Amorah. I have to tell him all about it. So it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks directly to Avram, and he says, the cry of Sodom and Amorah has come before me. I'm going to go see what's happening over there. And if the reports that I've had are true, I'm destroying the cities. The Pasuk is so clear. It says, I'm reading, you can look if you want it, Perek Yudchet Pasuk Chav Bet 1822, Vayifnu Mishom HaAnoshim. The men turned from there. Those are the angels. Vayelchu Sodoma. They went to Sodom. Vavroham Odenu Omeid Lifnei Hashem. And Avraham is still standing before God. Vayigash Avraham. We can't even translate it anymore. And Avraham approached. What are we to assume this means? He's Tell me how man gets closer to God. He's Vodenu Avram. Odenu Omeid Avram is still standing before God. That means they're in the midst of a conversation. All the next pasuk had to say was Vayomer Avraham, and Avraham said, why does it say Vayigash? Does Vayigash mean that he has moved geographically from point A to point B, so he's closer now? You can't even talk in such terms. Obviously, the word Vayigash must be talking of a different kind of approaching. Says Rashi, Motzinu Hagosha L'Mulchama. I'm reading the Rashi in Parsha Vayera. We find Hagosha approaching when one is ready to go to war, as it says, Vayigash Yoav, commander-in-chief of the forces of David, went out to war. Hagosha L'Pius. We find the word Hagosha used when the purpose is appeasement. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. The Hagosha L'Tfila, we find the word Hagosha approaching with regard to prayer, as it says, Vayigash Eliyahu Anavi approached. Ulechol Eile Nichnas Avram. Avram, as he stands before God, ready to pray for Sodom and Amorah, is preparing himself in three ways. L'daber Kashot, he's going to speak tough language to God. Ulepiyos, he's going to try to appease. Uletfilah, and to prayer. So what did Rashi say over here? It was so clear from the pasuk there. And it's so clear over here, if Vayigash would be read immediately after Miketz, it's quite clear. Yehuda's in the middle of having a conversation with Yosef. The Vayigash cannot mean that he draws closer geographically. The Vayigash, the word Vayigash represents an emotional, a psychological, and an intellectual approaching. Yehuda has prepared himself well in his mind for the confrontation that is now to take place. The Vayigash does not represent his legs. You know what the Vayigash represents? His mind. Rather than saying he approached, he found an approach to Yosef. He feels that he has learned psychologically what is it that is going to take this man who seems to have a heart of stone. The man seems to be absolutely cruel. Must be something that's going to penetrate. Something that is going to make a difference. Something that's going to soften him. Something that's going to be a chink in the armor that this man has around him. Has he no heart? Vayigash Elav Yehuda. We're going to read. And I know that reading means that I'm going to leave out half the shir, but alright, I say it all the time, so what? Let's go. Vayigash Elav Yehuda, because here you have to read it, because it's such a fascinating speech. It's the longest speech in Sefer Bereishis. And this longest speech in Sefer Bereishis, Nechama Leibowitz divides into three parts. Part one is the past. He's going to review the past. And by the way, we're going to have to understand, why indeed does Yehuda review the past? The past is as well known to Yosef as it is to him. Why go over old ground? Why start from the beginning? Start from now. After the whole report of what happened in the past, He is then going to anticipate, and he's going to say, listen, if the boy doesn't come home, such and such is going to happen. He's going to anticipate the future. He's going to say, this is what might very well happen. And then Yehuda is finally going to make, in two psukim, his proposal and his request. Let's read. And I will try to comment sort of, as I read. Vayigash Elav Yehuda, Yehuda approached him, or found the approach to him, or prepared himself to approach. Vayomer, he said, Be Adoni, please, my master, Yedaber no Avdecha Tova Beozne Adoni, let your servant speak in the ears of my master. It doesn't mean that he's going to walk over and going to whisper into his ear. What he means is, I want to say something that's going to go in, that's going to penetrate your ears. Don't be angry with your servant. Obviously, when he says don't be angry, it's because he plans on saying things that may very well evoke a response of anger. And even if we don't see it in the psukim, this entire speech of Yehuda has to be understood on two levels. There's the language of diplomacy. I think as Israelis, we have to become, if we haven't become masters in the art of diplomatic doublespeak, then we should become that quickly. You know, when an announcement is made by Chveis, whether it be Clinton or Netanyahu or anybody else, you have to read not only the lines, you have to read between the lines, around the lines, under the lines, because there are all sorts of underlying nuances, right? Those are the nuances. Of course, sometimes the statements are absolutely brutal and open. For example, Clinton's statement again about the settlements was brutal, straight, open, to the point. This is an obstacle to peace. It's not going to make anything easier. There are all sorts of... But there are nuances. There is political speak. And this is Yehuda. Yehuda is going to be saying things that if Yosef, and he assumes Yosef is smart enough to know exactly what he means, they can get him very, very angry. Ki kamocha kaparo, because you're like Paro. Rashi gives all sorts of pshatim on you are like Paro. The simple meaning is I respect you like Paro. And then beneath the surface there is another meaning. You're a liar, just like Paro is a liar. But I'll tell you, this time I found a new symbolic meaning in a few words in Rashi. Permit me to say it like it's a little off the beaten track. Rashi says that Yehuda tells Yosef, Paro doesn't keep his word. Gozer, he makes a decree, Veino Mekayein, and doesn't fulfill it. I want to read the words Gozer, Veino, Mekayein, those three words, in a different way. Gozer from the word Gizoru in the Haftorah of Miketz. He cuts, he divides. Ve'eno mekayim, and he's not the one mekayim from the term kol ha-mekayim nefesh achat, the one who saves a life. Goes there, Paro is a destructive force, ve'eno mekayim, and not, he is not a force that brings together. It's not bad. I tell you, if I'll say it another few times, I may even convince myself that that's the real pshat of Gozer Ve'eno Mekayim. Certainly coming on the heels of the way we have read the end of Miketz, followed by the Haftorah, and then the beginning of Vayigash. He is a destructive force. Is it also possible that Yehuda here is Nibo Velo Yodama Nibo? He is in a sense prophesying what will ultimately happen, that he's going to be destructive. He's going to be destructive, and he's not going to keep the Jewish people alive. He's not going to do it. All right. Further, Adoni Sholos Havadolema. He begins the report of the past. My master asked his servant, saying, "Hayesh lachem av or ach? Do you have a father or a brother?" Rashi brings beautiful medrash. Medrash says, "Listen, Yehuda is really telling him." People from a whole world came to buy grain in Mitzrayim. On any given day, thousands or tens of thousands arrived in Egypt to buy food. Was everybody questioned the way we were? Was everybody asked the same questions? Do you have a father or a brother? So the Medrash goes on to say, do we want your daughter or do you want to marry our sister? So you have to check everything out. I mean, shidduch. You have to do a job that will embarrass the CIA and the Shabbat. You have to find out all the information, right? That's if you are. But we're not looking to be mishabbos with one another. So why did you ask us these questions? You're asking us these questions. The fact that you singled us out from all other people that came to Mitzrayim is an indication that from the very first moment we set foot here, you're looking for something. You want to frame us. So here it is. Simple pasuk. The pasuk could be read as a nothing more than a report of what happened. Oh, my master asked his servants, do we have a father or a brother? You know, we had this very, very nice social conversation between the two of us. We talked about the mishpucha and the family and the kids and the einiklach. No. That's not the way the Medrash reads it. The Medrash reads in this, yes, on the diplomatic level, it's a very diplomatic, simple statement. But he's sending a message to Yosef. I accuse you of having been after us from the first moment we set foot. We hadn't done a thing in Mitzrayim. We said to my master, we have an old father, V'yeled zakunim katan, and a small young boy. By the way, and maybe not by the way, this is the way a parsha is supposed to be learned this way. the word father appears in his speech 14 times. In other words, there are key words, and the purpose of these key words are to soften, you know, when you talk about a tata, yet when you talk about an alter tata, a man has to be made of stone, has to have a heart of stone, not to be in some way affected. I mean, Nebuch, a poor, innocent, alter tata is going to be... is going to be so deeply hurt. Hurt is not the word for it. It's going to destroy him. And what's he have? He has a klinchik, a little Ben Zakunimo. V'och his mate, and not only that, you know, when you talk about the father, the brother dying, and he remained alone to his mother and father who loved him. By the way, somebody, I hadn't noticed this, somebody pointed out to Mishir last night, he didn't remain to his mother. His mother died in childbirth. So it's a little, you know, maybe he feels he doesn't have to tell him that the mother died in childbirth. All he wants to say is there's Nebuch, a little boy, a little baby that remained to a father and mother. I mean, have you no pity and no compassion? So it's a little stretching the truth slightly, but it's all in order to evoke some kind of response in this dictator, this tyrant before whom he stands. But Tomer al Avadecha, you said to your servants, how do you wear light? Bring him down to me, Vasima ini alav. And I will place my eyes upon him. By the way, Yosef never said that. You look back in the Pesukim, Yosef never said that. What Yehuda is telling her, him is, when you said, bring down our brother. So what did we assume? You want to see him. He's going to be proof that we're telling you the truth. V'chisim asayinu, the Medrash says, is this what you meant, to look at him? To accuse us falsely? What? This is what you call looking at him. This is why you wanted to see him. We said to my master, no, what I'm going to try and do is the following. As I read the pasuk, I'm going to read it like a diplomat. I'm going to read it softly. I'm going to read it with a sense of importuning, begging, beseeching. But then every so often you have to understand that there's a comment over there that beneath the surface there's a completely different meaning. There's the revealed part of the speech and there's the concealed part of the speech. There is that which is explicit and that which is implicit. We said to my master, Lo yuchal hanar lazov et aviv, v'azav et aviv hamet. The boy cannot leave his father. He will leave his father v'amet, and he will die. By the way, the mafarshim are not agreed. Who's going to die? Will the father die, or will the child die because of separation from the father? The word mate, by the way, is also used at a number of crucial points of death, and you'll see one of them coming soon. And you said, it's going back and forth. You said, we said, I said, you said, you said. It's a report. But the purpose of this report is in, or reminding him of the past, is in order to tell him, not simply to tell him things that he knows, but there is an attack in every word. You said to your servants, "Lo yedeid achichem hakaton itchem, lo tosifin lirot panai." If the little boy doesn't come down with you, can't see me again. That boy, this pasuk. If I would have been Yehuda, I would have exploded in a paroxysm of anger. I'm telling you about an old father with an old ben, with a young little ben Yachidel left all alone, and I'm telling you that either one or the other is going to die if they separate. That's what I'm telling you. And you know what your response was? Your response was, if your little brother doesn't come down, don't ever see me again. Is that a response to what I was saying? This is the way you responded? Totally unmoved. It made no difference. I'm talking to you about human beings. I'm talking to you about a tata. I'm talking to you about a child. They didn't mean anything to you. You're telling us, in a sense, it may very well be a death sentence on us. We cannot come here and buy any more food unless we bring that child. You didn't even hear a word I said. You don't hear what I'm telling you? You didn't hear what I said to you? Old father, small child, separation is going to be destructive. No! You just, if your little brother doesn't come down, don't see me again. Don't set foot in here. This is a response. I mean, I'm getting upset. And it came to pass Avi, when we went up to my your servant, my father, the word servant appears 13 times in the Sedra, in the speech. Father 14 times, servant 13. And it came to pass when we went up to your servant, my father, and we told him the words of my master, Vayomer Avinu, our father said, Shuvu, Shuvu, Lono Matoto, go bring us a little bit of food, you know, a little bit of food. We need a little bit of food. Vanoman, we said, Lo Nuchalada, that we can't go down, Ki Yesh Achino Akotoni Tonu Yeranu, if we have our little brother with us, we can go down, Ki Lo Nuchalada, we can't see that man's face. Vachino Akotoni Nenu Itonu. If our little brother is not with us. Vayomer Avdecho Avi Eleinu, your servant, my father, said to me, Aten Yadatem, and here he's really tugging at the heartstrings. Aten Yadatem, and not only is he tugging at the heartstrings, he's saying something that Yaakov not only never said, Yaakov would never have said. But the fact that Yehuda is saying it is going to be extremely significant to Yosef. Avdecho, your servant, my father, said, Atem Yadatem, you know, Kishnayim Yodoli Ishti, my wife gave birth to two. What do you mean, my wife? Do you know what Yehuda is now saying? He is finally admitting that the real wife was Rachel. That Rachel was the real wife. Yaakov never said these words. Yaakov would never have uttered such words to his children. Yehuda doesn't even know that what he said here may have more impact on Yosef than anything else. There's an admission over here of the superiority or equality of Yosef and Yehuda, but Yehuda doesn't even know it. By the way, it's usually like that. When you're talking to somebody, it's not what you're saying intentionally in order to influence somebody that's going to make the difference. It can be something completely outlined. I hear it all the time. Rabbi, what you said in that sermon 25 years ago changed my whole life. I don't remember the person. I certainly don't remember the drasha. I certainly don't remember the sentence. You can be sure of that. But there was something over there, unbeknownst to me. I can say something that I completely different intentions, but the way somebody else hears it. Oy, what Yosef is hearing when Yehuda says that his father said, my wife gave birth to two children. One left for Omar, and I said, Ach, Torav, Torav. He was torn apart below the Yisrael. I think I haven't seen him until now. Ule Kachin Kamed Zeh, you're going to take this one too. May Impanai from before me. The Koror Wason, and a tragedy is going to befall him. The Horadetem et Sevati Bero Oshaola, you're going to take my old age in evil down into the grave. I know that I'm at the end of my line, but I'm going to play brinksmanship right now because the next two psukim are so fascinating. They are so fascinating. In all of Sefer Bereishis, you don't have two psukim like this. Not only do you not have two psukim like this, along came we Jews and we even intensified the problem or the drama of the two psukim. Va'ata, this is Yehuda talking to... this is the second part of his speech. The first part, up until now, everything up until now was a report of the past. Now he's anticipating the tragedy that will befall us if he doesn't go home. Va'ata kivoi al avdecha avi. Now when I come to your servant my father, v'hanare nenu itonu, and the boy is not with us, v'nafshok shura v'nafshol, and now their souls are inextricably intertwined. So what will happen? Do you know how this pasuk has left us? So what happened? The pasuk ends without ending. This pasuk is completely and totally dependent on the next pasuk. What it really should have said is the next pasuk should have been part of this pasuk. Look what's happening over here. When I come to your servant, my father, and the boy is not with me, so what's going to happen? You know what the end is going to happen? So it says it at the end of the next pasuk. Vameit, in the middle of the pasuk, he's going to die. But you know what's happened over here? Yehuda has interrupted, like he's having difficulty coming to the end of the sentence. Sometimes it's difficult when you're going to have to say that if such and such happens, Nebuch, soll der Eibishter abhieten. You know, you have that difficulty saying it, and he's going to die. You can't say it. So he's delaying it. So he puts in the parenthetic comment, v'nafsho k'shura b'nafsho. That's a parenthetic comment. He says, you know, by the way, the two of them, father and son, are bound up in a bond of neshama. Come along, we smart Jews. And you know what we smart Jews did? We made a sheni over here. So we made another interruption. And you know what we're doing? We're waiting with bated breath. Now, what's going to happen if the boy doesn't come home? And since there's an interruption, you know what Yehuda has to do? He has to begin the sentence over again. V'hoyo kir oto ki ein hana, when he will see that the boy is not there, finally he says the bad word, v'meit, he will die. V'horidu avadecha et sevat avdecha, your servant will bring down the old age of your servant, our father, v'yogon, in unhappiness into the grave. If in the last year we talked about the art, and I call it the divine art of biblical narrative, you have it over here. And here comes the most probably this is what impresses Yosef more than anything else. Ki avdecha orav etanar, because your servant is the one who guaranteed the safety of the child. May im avi lemor, for my father saying. Because it is in this sentence that you know what Yosef is being told? Yehuda has done tshuva. What he failed to do for Yosef, he's now doing for Binyamin. What he should have done then, and made certain that the boy is brought home, Yosef is brought home, he now does for Binyamin. Ki avdecha orav asanamim avi lemor, because your servant guaranteed the safety of the child. Im lo avienu elecha, if I don't bring him to you, v'chatosi lo v'chalayon, I will have sinned to my father for all time. Last part of the speech, we'll just read it. Here comes the proposal. V'ata yeshiv na avdecha tachas hana, let your servant remain in place of the boy, Eved La'adoni, a servant to my master, Bahanar Yal im Echav, and let the boy go up with his brothers. Ki eich ele el avi, how will I go up to my father, Bahanar in enuiti, and the child is not with me, pen er baro'a asher yim tzatavi, lest I see the evil that is going to befall my father. By the way, longest speech, certainly the most powerful, powerful speech of all, masterful, except Yehuda doesn't know that it's all a waste. He doesn't know. It's masterful. Vayigash el of Yehuda. Yehuda has prepared himself intellectually, psychologically, emotionally. He talks like a melech. He talks like a man. He is a man who has accepted responsibility. He is a man who's showing achrayut. He's going to hold that family, what he knows of the family, he's going to hold that together. He is ready to go brinksmanship all the way. He will use halachic truth in order to save Binyamin. What he's really doing, and of course, forgive me, he's quite well aware of the cruelty and the falsehood of the man who stands before him. Yehuda, Vayigash el of Yehuda, Yehuda acts like a melech. What he had lost in Vayeshev, he begins to regain in Miketz, and he expresses it here in Vayigash. And that's why the Medrash says, Hine hamalachim noadu yachdav, two kings come together, ze Yosef v'Yehuda. Yehuda and Yosef, the Medrash sees them as two kings, each one with their own personality, their own strengths, and these two strengths will merge at one moment in history to become David Melech Yisrael and then Shlomo. But I know that in this last sentence that I said, there's so much. That's all the stuff that I left out. We'll leave that for another time. That's it.